The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You took a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Yeah, good day, Tokens and Tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, August 29th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to Rolla J Studios here in beautiful Potland, Oregon. Let's give a chance to introduce you to everyone else on the studio crew today. Oh, I guess there's just me on the studio crew today. Yes, I am running this show completely solo. We got nobody else here but Radical Russ today, so please forgive me if there's any technical defects. I will do my best. Just a confluence of events. Brian the Red's out doing his thing, getting some work done. Cannabis Carry's got the week off. Wiz Calico's busy doing some stuff. Ganja John's getting ready for something special. So it's just me today, Radical Russ, here on the Russ Belville Show. But that just means you get more Russ for your money, right? If you don't like it, we'll give you your money back. So welcome to the show. We got all sorts of great stuff to cover on today's Wednesday show. As we do every Wednesday, we visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our Cannabis Q&A, where we take your live questions in chat and by phone. Maybe not by phone today. I don't have a phone screener, but at least by chat, we will get your live questions in. You can ask him anything you want about cannabis science, culture, history, and health. And today, we're going to take a look at that study. It's been making headlines lately about teen pot use and its link, or supposed link, to lower IQs. We'll get Dr. Mitch's take on that study and whether or not we really need to fear what it says. Also on today's show, we got time for a radical rant. We're going to take a look right here at the state of Oregon and the condition of our legalization campaign. And I'm going to make a suggestion to my friends in Washington who don't like I-502 on a better way they could spend their money and time if they really support legalization. Also on today's show, it's Irie Wednesday, so we're going to be playing a little bit of reggae-flavored music today. Although I'm going to bring back more music from that album that I love so much, Reggae Goes Country. And on today's show, we are going to play one of those great songs from Reggae Goes Country. You remember the old Kenny Rogers tune, The Gambler. We're going to get that with a little reggae flavor from Busy Signal, the band. But before all of that, we're going to get to our Daily Cannabis Chronicle, and in the headlines today, all sorts of interesting stories, including a look at Los Angeles, California, activists trying to get a referendum on the medical pot dispensary ban. Also in the Bay Area, Berkeley Patients Group is moving down the street to a new location. In Colorado, we've got endorsement on Amendment 64 coming from 100 professors, and yes, opposition from the medical marijuana community. Then we're going to take a look at the hurdles being faced here in the state of Oregon with the OCTA, Oregon Cannabis Tax Act legalization campaign. And ex-Chicago Bear Sam Hurd is in the news again. We'll talk about his continuing involvement with trying to purchase drugs and what the judge has done in his latest incident. Also, that reminds me, we've got our pigskin potheads and our NCR Stoners Fantasy Football League draft taking taking place tomorrow, right here live at 6 p.m. Pacific time. We got 12 teams that will be competing in an NFL fantasy football team by, for, and about stoners. And I'll be running the Pigskin Potheads, a team made up of nothing but players who have had incidents with marijuana in their past. It'll be really interesting. Check that out. Live event tomorrow, the Fantasy Draft, Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific time. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Daily Cannabis Chronicle headlines are coming up next. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show.
Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word Russ to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's Russ to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Fishbone pulled up here. We pulled up today in the van, and I walked out of the building, walked through the big building over there. I walked outside, and I'm walking over by the lake, and I just see everybody casually smoking weed like it's all right. Like it's supposed to be like that.
Because it is all right.
Like you ain't got to worry about no police coming and asking you what you smoking or what are you doing here, or let me see your driver's license. See, that's how they do it in Amsterdam. Everybody just out there chilling. Ain't nobody stressing. You go buy your weed at the shop, you go kick it, smoke your weed, walk the street, do whatever you want to, and you don't even...
Marijuana's not going to re-legalize itself. You've got to do your part. Join the National Cannabis Coalition today at nationalcannabiscoalition.com. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis. The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carey, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
Cannabis Carey is off today. I'm Radical Russ Belville with your Daily Cannabis Chronicle. This from the Los Angeles Times. Activists call for referendum against LA pot shop ban. Medical marijuana activists said they expect to turn in about 50,000 voter signatures to the city clerk Wednesday, hoping to force a ballot referendum to repeal a recently passed ban on medical marijuana dispensaries in Los Angeles. If the signatures are submitted, the ordinance will be temporarily suspended, according to election officials in the city clerk's office. The names will then be verified against voter registration information. If they are found to be valid, the ban would be further suspended until voters get a chance to decide whether to keep it in place, the officials said. The vote would share the ballot with the mayoral primary contest, adding a controversial issue to the mix of this campaign season. But the dispensary activists behind the ballot measure effort say they are hoping the referendum can be avoided. They are calling on the city council to overturn the ban, which is set to go into effect on September 6th, and adopt a more lenient ordinance. Councilman Paul Koretz, one of the medical cannabis community's staunchest allies, is pushing for a new law that would allow 100 or so of the city's oldest and most established dispensaries to remain open. He said, quote, "The city needs a small number of well-regulated and patient-centered dispensaries. Without it," he said, "the city will be struck with no rules and no protections again," end quote. Los Angeles officials have struggled for years to come up with a workable dispensary policy, thanks to ever-changing court precedents as to what cities can do to regulate distribution of medical marijuana. The city is battling more than 100 lawsuits over its earlier attempts to regulate dispensaries, according to officials in the Office of City Attorney Carmen Trutanich. Well, they're just suffering because of their own intransigence and trying to get something passed here in Los Angeles. That's what the problem is here. The people of Los Angeles voted for Prop 215. They want safe access to the medicine in these dispensaries. The dispensaries, by and large, have been well run, but through the lack of regulation, some unscrupulous marketers have managed to make their way into the mix as well. But you don't blame that on the people that are trying to do the business. You blame that on the people whose job it is to regulate the business. And that would be the Los Angeles City Council, which has just tried to put its bury its head in the sand and pretend that medical marijuana doesn't exist, or pretend that it'll just go away if they don't do anything with it. It's time for them to come up with workable regulations, not bans, not lotteries that just randomly pick who's going to be the business owners here. We're talking about people that are dealing with patients, people who are dealing with people with disabilities and illnesses. And this shouldn't just be run by any old fly-by-night weed operator. This needs to be people who understand the needs of patients, understand the science of cannabinoids, and understand the laws that are involved here that put so many patients at risk. Come up with something workable, work with the city councilman Koretz there, who sounds like he's got a very good idea for letting the best dispensaries continue to operate in Los Angeles. News now from the Silicon Valley's mercurynews.com. The Berkeley Marijuana Dispensary, Berkeley Patients Group, that was closed by feds, will reopen down the street. Doug Oakley reports for the Oakland Tribune. For as long as anyone in the neighborhood can remember, the lot at 2366 San Pablo Avenue has been an empty eyesore, one of many lining the street with chain-link fences, barbed wire, and weeds. That is changing as work has begun to spruce up the 14,000-square-foot lot and dilapidated 1,200-square-foot building. But in this case, the progress could come with the smell of marijuana controversy. Berkeley Patients Group, the city's largest medical marijuana dispensary, which industry insiders say sold about $15 million in weed a year before being forced to close by the federal government May 1st, is relocating to this spot. Letters from the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Francisco to the previous landlord of the group down the street at 2747 San Pablo Avenue threatened him with seizure of his property because the dispensary was too close to two schools, so he evicted them. No opening date has been set at the new site, and officials from Berkeley Patients Group refused to go on record about their plans. The owner of the new property said she is not worried about the threats from the federal government for renting to a medical marijuana outlet. Said Nala Drobi of Morega, who has owned the lot for 10 years, quote, "Our property is not close to any school." The previous landlord had a very good experience with this group. He said they were very organized, and most important thing is they had no violations and great security, end quote. Drobi said she also talked to the Berkeley Police Department, the city attorney, and neighboring landlords at the group's previous site down the street, quote, "And I heard they had no problems," end quote. Berkeley's law governing medical marijuana dispensaries says none can be closer than 600 feet to any public or private school. Berkeley Patients Group new location is just over 1,000 feet from two schools, Rosa Parks Elementary School and Nia House Learning Center. Berkeley Patients Group previously was directly across the street from a school, but it was allowed to stay because it was established before Berkeley wrote its rules. Well, the thing about this is, nobody had a problem with Berkeley Patients Group when it was operating at 2747 San Pablo Avenue. It brightened up that neighborhood. The city officials, the city attorney, the council, everybody involved with city management had no problems with the dispensaries. In fact, they enjoyed the revenues and the jobs and the urban cleanup that came with Berkeley Patients Group, the tax revenues that came into the city of Berkeley. And of course, the people of Berkeley are well known for being very progressive, very liberal, and tolerant of medical marijuana. The only people that had a problem with Berkeley Patients Group being within 1,000 feet of the school were people that were 2,500 miles away or more in Washington, D.C. Those are the people. Or the people in the U.S. attorney's offices that are run by the Obama administration, but then located in California. They're the ones that had the problem. It's only the feds that seem to have a problem with the medical marijuana. And they're going to continue to have this problem. They will find some new excuse as they move to this new location here at 2366 San Pablo Avenue. Just, what was that, four blocks down. They have to move because of the federal threats. But the feds will find some some new way to threaten Berkeley Patients Group, because when you get right down to it, it really doesn't have anything to do with how close any of these things are to schools. It's how well they're run, how they provide an example to the people of how marijuana distribution isn't scary, how it can be safely done, how it can provide jobs and tax revenue and economic boost to a city. It shows how these businesses aren't the scare that all of the prohibitionists try to say they are. And most of all, it provides money to an activist base, people who are determined to spread the mantra of medical marijuana and eventual marijuana legalization across the country. That's really why they're coming down on Berkeley, on Harborside, on Oaksterdam, on all of these marijuana activists. Has nothing to do with being close to school. It has to do with being too close to power. Colorado Springs Independent is reporting choosing sides on the marijuana amendment. This is from Bryce Crawford. The campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol continues its push for Amendment 64, this time lining up support from the academic community in the form of a letter signed by 100 or so professors of various subjects. Four came from the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs, and one came from Colorado State University, Pueblo. The unified voice of academia declares in the press release, quote, "The state of Colorado, as well as our nation, have successfully walked the path from prohibition to regulation in the past. 80 years ago, Colorado voters approved a ballot measure to repeal alcohol prohibition at the state level, which was followed by repeal at the federal level. This year, we have the opportunity to do the same thing with marijuana and once again lead the nation toward more sensible, evidence-based laws and policies," end quote. Dr. Dale DeBoer, chair of the economics department at UCCS, says his support for decriminalization is based on the ineffectiveness of prohibition, continued with evidence showing marijuana's no more harmful than the stuff you can legally buy today. As well, he says, quote, "To the extent that marijuana has health consequences, these are better treated via health care, like with alcohol abuse, than through criminalization," end quote. We asked the good professor if he agreed with the Colorado Center on Law and Policy's assessment that the passage of Amendment 64 could result in a $100 million windfall for the state of Colorado within 5 years. He said, quote, "I am personally always suspicious of numerical estimates that I did not generate. While these estimates are possible, and I have no reason to doubt them, I have not recreated these studies. As such, I take these numbers as possible, but reserve some healthy caution in regards to them." And continuing on with this story, there is a note in here toward the end talking about how there is a group called Coloradans for Cannabis Patients' Rights, and a Facebook page there that, well, once again, you have a legalization on the ballot, and there are some medical marijuana patients who have a problem with it. They have created a No on 64 logo that they're using that says, "Doesn't regulate marijuana like alcohol, bad for Colorado." And once again, they are going on with a lot of the same complaints that we've always heard from the patients against pragmatism, that having these regulations for healthy people will somehow harm them. It doesn't matter how you write your legalization. There will always be somebody who smokes marijuana who's got a problem with it. Reporting from Jennifer Alexander in The Examiner, legal marijuana faces multiple hurdles in Oregon. Proponents trying to legalize marijuana for the last few decades have become accustomed to roadblocks standing in their way. More recently, when the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act submitted signatures for early turn-in, they discovered that more than 40% of the signatures were invalid. However, they ultimately succeeded and earned a place on the November 2012 ballot. According to a new article in The Oregonian, entitled "Pot Legalization Supporters Failed to Pay Petition Circulators," two former employees, Brenda Cahill and Terry Garrett, contacted The Oregonian, quote, "to complain about how they'd been treated by the campaign," end quote. They claim that the campaign owes them a few hundred dollars each in back wages. Paul Stanford, chief petitioner of the campaign, admits to The Oregonian that while he is unsure of the exact amount, there could be a few thousand dollars in back wages still due to petitioners, possibly more. The campaign has raised $333,000 in contributions, but it has spent $345,000 just qualifying for the ballot, according to OrStar, the database which tracks campaign spending and contributions in Oregon. Stanford says, quote, "We can only pay out the money we have in," end quote. Washington and Colorado also have initiatives on the ballot for legalized marijuana in November. A Huffington Post article claims that the Washington effort already raised over $2 million for their campaign to legalize marijuana, and that the Colorado effort raised over $1 million. According to the same article, Oregon has only reported contributions of about $1,000. While Washington and Colorado are working to purchase enough television spots to convince potential voters to support their efforts, the Oregon campaign is struggling to finance paying the petitioners back wages before they can even begin to publicize the effort. Stanford says, quote, "They're the first priority." According to the Oregonian, Stanford says raising donations for paying the back wages has been tough. We will talk more about this when we get into our radical rant at the end of the show. Until then, stick around. We'll be right back with your daily Toker tune.
It's 420 back in Idaho, where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our roots. You know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man, reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Come to Seattle, the greenest city on Earth, on September 14th, 15th, and 16th to celebrate the greenery of the Pacific Northwest. That's right. High Times Magazine is hosting the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in the Emerald City. Top businesses of the cannabis industry will be in attendance, showcasing cultivation gear, paraphernalia, stoner apparel, and more. Check out the finest cannabis products of the medical cannabis industry. Meet High Times cultivation editors Danny Danko and Nico Escondido. They'll teach you how to grow top-grade ganja, and at least McDonough will be there too. She's the author of the official High Times Cannabis Cookbook. Be there for the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup Awards when High Times honors the top sativas, indicas, hybrids, edibles, and concentrates submitted by Washington's top dispensaries. And don't forget the High Times Bash for VIPs on Friday night, one major party with top musical guests. Go to medcancup.com for details. Come to Seattle for the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup on September 14th, 15th, and 16th at Fremont Studios.
I have to say that there was one question that was voted on that ranked fairly high. And that was whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy and job creation. I don't know what this says about the online audience, but the answer is no. I don't think that is a good strategy to grow our economy. So.
About nearly 1 million lives wrecked by a marijuana arrest every year, Mr. President. Politely tell President Obama what you think about legalization by calling the White House at 202-456-1111. Knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, we're bringing back some more music from Reggae Goes Country for today's Irie Wednesday because I like it. My dad's a country musician. I grew up listening to a lot of good old classic country from the 60s and 70s as a kid. And so whenever I hear these remakes, it always kind of trips some old childhood memories. It's a lot of fun for me. So, and it's kind of interesting too, because reggae and country from a bass player's perspective are kind of the opposite. So it's always interesting to hear how they make the change from the country beat to the reggae beat. And in this particular tune, I think they do a really good job with it. It's a band called Busy Signal, and they're taking the old popular Kenny Rogers tune, The Gambler, and they've given it a reggae feel. So let's check this out. This is Busy Signal with The Gambler.
On the train bound from nowhere, I met up with the gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns staring out the window at the darkness, till boredom overtook us and he began to speak. He said, "Son, I've made a lot out of reading people's faces and knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind my saying, I can see your outer faces. For a taste of your whiskey, I give you some advice." So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. And then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, "If you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold it, know when to fold it, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows that the secret to surviving is knowing what to throw in and knowing what to keep. Cause every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser, and the best that you can hope for is to die in your sleep." And when he finished speaking, he turned back toward the window, crushed out a cigarette, faded off to sleep. And somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. But in his final words, I found an ace that I could keep. You got to know when to hold it, know when to fold it, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money while sitting at the table. There'll be time enough to count when the deal is done. You got to know when to hold it, know when to fold it, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money while sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the deal is done. You got to know when to hold it, sitting at the table. There'll be time enough to count when the deal is done.
That's Busy Signal with The Gambler. We're back with Dr. Mitch right after this messages.
Dear Dad, how should I say this? You know how you enjoy a drink after work? Well, in many ways, I'm just like you. I have a good job, I work hard, but when I get home, I prefer to relax with marijuana instead of alcohol. They're a little similar, but marijuana is actually less damaging to my health. And frankly, I don't feel like crap the next day. I hope this makes sense. But if not, let's talk.
Big Daddy Think.
Funky Roller Rage, Roller Rage, Roller Rage.
Oh yeah, this is Big Daddy, and I'll be your freakazoid every Thursday night, right here at the Funky Roller Rink.
Funky Roller Rink.
11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, only on National Cannabis Radio.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome, everybody. We are exactly half past the hour, and joined by Dr. Mitch Earlywine once again, as we do every Wednesday here on the Russ Belville Show. Welcome back, Dr. Mitch.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, people that listen to the show a lot, they know that at the beginning of this segment, we always give you a chance to discuss the latest scientific findings and stories that are out there. But this time, the listeners have beat you to it, Dr. Mitch. They're already asking me, is Dr. Mitch going to cover that thing on teenagers and IQ, on teenagers and lower IQ? So this one's been making the rounds. We've seen a lot of headlines on it. Tell our listeners what this study's all about and whether we really need to pay it much attention.
I'm happy to go into it. The study itself is right. The media coverage has been abominable. And so let's just walk through some of the details. This is a huge sample in New Zealand that's been studied literally for decades. They got folks to do a series of tasks, including some IQ tests early in life, and then they followed them up. They're all averaging in age around 38 now. And we do see a subset of folks, 50 out of 1,050 or so, who were heavy marijuana users consistently across this time, including a group that started really young, started before age 18, being heavy regular users. And these folks do end up with some meaningful IQ deficits way down the line. Obviously, we've seen this before from the data up in Canada. Marijuana is not for teens, as we've talked about time and time again. What, of course, isn't getting any coverage is folks who start in adulthood, those regular users aren't really showing meaningful changes in IQ. And so the bottom line is, let's keep cannabis out of the hands of kids. Gee, the underground market isn't doing a very good job of that.
Yeah, I think that's the takeaway that I like from this story is, you know, because I started my marijuana use when I was 22 years old. So, you know, they talk about in this study, they didn't find people above the age of 18 who'd started in their adulthood to find any decline in IQ. Well, for the people, though, that would, you know, might be listening to this and go, oh, geez, you know, I started smoking when I was 14. Oh, no. What are we talking about as far as IQ deficit? Could this be really affecting their lives today?
In truth, the average was an 8-point IQ deficit if you were a heavy user before age 18. Is 8 points a meaningful bit? Yeah, it really is. What can you do to make up for that? Odds are high, some of this is a product of things you missed in school. So IQ tests pretend to be a measure of aptitude, of how quickly you learn, but a little bit of it is also how much have you acquired in your learning. So if you've got a gaping hole in your knowledge of American history, by all means, pick up a book, watch a documentary, have some fun in that domain, and you'll be delighted at how you can make up for that. Now, if your reaction time is not as fast as you wish, if you don't seem to be able to master new material as quickly as you would like, odds are high you're either getting high too much or getting high too early in the day. And obviously you can do that for a while and you know, take a month off, as we talked about before, get your sensitivity back to that and see how it affects you. But in truth, 8 points is not some kind of dementia. We're talking about people who aren't necessarily as smart as this imaginary what I could have been. It's not that suddenly all these folks are retarded.
You know, Dr. Nora Volko was quoted in one of the reports on this saying it was the cleanest study she'd ever seen. And she was referring to them trying to deal with confounding factors like education level or income level amongst the people in these surveys. I was wondering myself because, you know, I was went through a lot of these intelligence testing as a kid, and I always kind of came to the conclusion that what IQ tests show is how good you are at passing IQ tests. So are there other confounders here, or is this really as clean as Dr. Volko says?
It's definitely the best one that's been out there, but that hardly makes it perfect. It's clearly correlational. These kids may have turned to cannabis early in life in part because they were not necessarily succeeding in domains that might require intelligence. There's no way we can control for that. And the IQ test is not perfect in any way. In fact, my friend Alan Kaufman has a book called IQ Testing 101 that is just superb on this topic. But what it's really saying is, here's a bunch of tests that really predict how well you do in school.
All right, we're going to go to our chat room now and get some questions that are already appearing here. And if you want to get in on this, just go to ncr420.com during our live shows, and you can get your questions answered right here in our chat room. So first, we have one from one of our business supporters, Handmade Apparel, asking, cannabis causing chronic vomiting, or what is this so-called cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome?
This is a curious reaction to cannabis in at least 8 individual case studies, where folks who, you know, thought that cannabis was really okay started using and ended up really with uncontrolled aversive vomiting, had to take these like hot showers and end up in the emergency room, and it just is not the plant for them. And it's funny because so many of us turn to cannabis as an anti-nausea, but obviously the cannabinoid system is involved in this, and this is a subset of folks who cannot respond to the plant the way most people do. And it's happened enough times now that I really do feel like it's a real thing.
You know, I had a post on this a while back, and it generated so much comments and controversy from, you know, some people that would say, yes, this is the real thing. You know, I was a pot smoker, or I was really into smoking weed, and then suddenly this thing came along where I was puking, and if I took a hot shower, it felt better. And then other commenters would jump in thinking that they were, you know, just trying to be antagonistic or pointing out that they were making things up, or this was some government plot to make us think marijuana was bad. But it became clear to me as I read more and more of these comments that, yeah, this is really happening to some people. And so is this something that once a person has it, they're always going to have it? They can never go back to smoking marijuana, or do we just not know enough yet?
I asked some folks who emailed me, is it strain specific? Would you be willing to try a different quantity or a different time or something like that? This is so aversive, nobody wants to mess around with it. So I do feel like it's potentially from contaminants in some grow areas, or it may be that certain strains are really heavy duty on this for some people. But once they've had this experience, nobody wants to try a different strain, and even if that means we would discover that it's not for everything, because they just don't want to risk it.
Wow, that must be you know, awful feeling then. People are just rejecting marijuana altogether. All right. So another question that we've got. Oh, and by the way, folks, if you don't get a chance to get your question into the chat room, or you're listening to this on a replay, something like that, you can always send your questions in by email. Dr. Mitch's direct line is 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And who knows, your question may form the basis of a study someday. We have another question from our chat room coming in. Respect wants to know, does cannabis help with bursitis? And just for my own interest, what the heck is bursitis?
Bursitis is a little like arthritis. It's related to inflammation in the joints and can be incredibly painful and respond to some of the same things that arthritis responds to. But it's not the agitation of the bone in the exact same way that arthritis is. And we do see, like with any other pain, at least in some individual cases, that a modest amount is the way to go. So too much actually does seem to aggravate this, if not the condition itself, at least the subjective experience of pain. But too little also doesn't seem to help much, and finding that baby bear just right spot seems to be the only way to go.
All right. We got a question from Reefer Rob in the chat room asking, if I have a viral infection, will cannabis help? And I guess, will it hurt, too? We could ask that.
In fact, it looks like neither on this. So we do see some antiviral properties in the Petri dish, but not a great amount of stuff with humans. And we do see some antibacterial properties. Those seem to be more consistent, at least with the data that I've seen. So it's not going to help. It's not going to hurt. If you've got a virus that's creating respiratory issues for you, obviously I really recommend either edibles or the vaporizer to not aggravate that with any kind of potential irritants.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the vaporizer. I was having a conversation online with someone just yesterday who was a asthma patient and who was expressing that it's very difficult to convince people where this person lives that they're using cannabis for asthma. They just, you know, what? That can't be. So I was wondering maybe if you could tell people, you know, what the basis for that medical use would be. And is the medical community starting to recognize that?
What's amazing is, in fact, even edible cannabis helps asthma, and it looks like what's happening is the opening up of the smaller bronchial passages way deep down in the lungs that seems to happen in response to cannabis, and has little to do with actually the inhalation part so much as a genuine cannabinoid response to opening up these passages in the lungs. So even edibles could help an asthma patient.
Got a really good question here from John Thomas, who wants to know, does cannabis interact badly with any drug or work against the functioning of any drug, that interaction problem?
So we don't have a ton of data, but there are two big findings. One is that alcohol slows the metabolism of THC, and so that can not necessarily be troublesome, but certainly something to be aware of. And then the dreaded Viagra interaction. Cannabis basically slows down the enzyme that breaks Viagra down, and I'm not a fan of Viagra anyway, but this is really not a combination you want to go with because it can basically lead you to suddenly see blue, if you can believe that, when Viagra's overdosed, have a painful erection, which I know sounds ironic to some folks, and end up in the emergency room. So you really don't want to mix those two.
And, you know, another note that we ought to make while we're on the subject of alcohol and Viagra, those are two things you shouldn't be mixing, correct?
Oh, man. Viagra is not, I mean, yes, absolutely. You don't want to mix those either. And I hate to say it, but my candy-flipping folks in the rave community also, please don't do any stimulant like ecstasy and Viagra as well.
Just avoid the Viagra at all costs, and if the weed's good enough, you don't need it anyway, right?
And in all honesty, does love require a big stiff penis? I mean, can't you just hug and squeeze?
Hug and squeeze and tug and pull. Okay. Again, somehow my show's turned into the Dan Savage Show. I don't know how this keeps happening. All right. So before we go, Dr. Mitch, I want to give everyone a chance to check up on your latest work and research. Is there anything new that you're working on that we need to know about out there on the internets?
Alas, my ADHD study just got rejected yet again, and I wanted to just thank everybody who contributed data on that, and we're going to go to another journal, but I'm afraid the MDs don't understand the point we're trying to make, and just wanted to thank everybody on that. And when I do have a new thing coming out, I'll let everybody know.
And one last question for me here is that there's a recent Oregonian editorial, and it was kind of lambasting the activists here in Oregon who are trying to get PTSD, post-traumatic stress, well, I like to call it post-traumatic stress injury, post-traumatic stress disorder added to the list of qualifying conditions. And in their editorial, they basically point out that there's not a lot of really good studies on PTSD. Everything we're getting is anecdotal, and there's anecdotes going the other way against marijuana use. And why would we want to open up the medical marijuana to even more conditions that people might be abusing or lying about? So I'm wondering if you can address that, this Oregonian editorial board, on what we do know about PTSD and why shouldn't we just allow people to try medical marijuana for that?
This has been a strange thing for America to deal with. I have data suggesting that folks with PTSD symptoms do expect relief from cannabis. We can't get the randomized clinical trial approved, of course. We are seeing some really compelling data from some other countries that cannabinoids could be extremely helpful for this, but we don't have a ton of data. Bottom line is this may not be the treatment of choice. The exposure-based treatments are probably our main line of defense right now for PTSD. But my goodness, should we make it so that these people can't have access? That just breaks my heart. Here's something that they at least claim is helping. By all means, let's make sure that they have that opportunity. And in truth, what we're not seeing is consistent evidence that this makes things worse. If there's a subset of folks who are finding it basically exacerbates their symptoms, by all means, let them not use it.
And you know, Dr. Mitch, that addresses something that I ranted about a little in hour two yesterday that just frustrates me to no end, is this idea that medical marijuana or marijuana may not be the best treatment, so they shouldn't have it at all. Well, if it helps a little, if it helps some, why not let them have it, especially with as low side effect and non-toxicity that we have with cannabis?
And no other drug is held to that standard. If I wanted to introduce a new antidepressant, I don't have to prove that it's better than all the other ones that have ever existed. I just have to prove that it works.
There we go. Well, we'll keep fighting for that, and we'll keep fighting for our veterans and all the people that could benefit from the use of cannabis for PTSD and other sorts of mental health issues, as we find lots of people are getting a lot of relief from this. Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany joins us every Wednesday here for Cannabis Q&A. Thanks for your fantastic questions, folks. Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us.
Talk to you soon.
All right. When we come back, time for Radical Rant. We're going to talk a little bit about Oregon.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
If you're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana and the next thing you know, they got 10 years, they've got mandatory sentences, and these judges just say, they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, it's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club,
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing, I mean, it's just...
makes more sense on the marijuana issue than the President, the Congress, and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. The young people go into prisons, they come out, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. And earlier in the news today, we did a story on Oregon here, my home state, where we have Measure 80, the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, which has made the ballot, and we're very, very happy about that. Oregon Cannabis Tax Act would legalize the personal possession and cultivation of marijuana and institute commercial sales, distribution, and cultivation of marijuana as well, legalize industrial hemp, provide for drug education, provide for drug rehab, money to the state, yada, yada, yada. It's a fantastic, fantastic bill here, fantastic initiative that would give us a great deal of marijuana freedom here in the state of Oregon. However, when it comes to passing marijuana legalization, it's not enough to just get it on the ballot. You've got to be able to pass this stuff, and you've got to be able to campaign for this. I'm driving around right now in my Jeep with Measure 80, Yes on Measure 80, written on the backs of my windows and the sides of my windows of my Jeep, large letters, you know, giving them, you know, the website to the campaign and so forth. Vote Yes on 80. Regulate marijuana like alcohol. And as I drive around town and I park in different parking lots at the store and so forth, invariably I see someone who stops on their way to the store or walking by, stops to read what's on the window. And I've gotten to talk to a few of these people, and to a one, they are completely ignorant of the fact that we've got marijuana legalization on the ballot. They're in great support of it, most of them. I did speak to one young lady who said she wasn't going to vote. She didn't care. What difference does it make? But for, by and large, most of the people that saw it said, well, yeah, I'd vote for that. I'd vote for legalization. So I feel like marijuana legalization can do very well here in the state of Oregon if people only knew about it, knew that it was coming up. And so far, all they're hearing about marijuana legalization is negativity from our Oregonian, from the Oregonian, the state's largest newspaper based here in Portland, article after article coming out, attacking the petitioners, Paul Stanford, for mistakes and things that are going on here that are, you know, obviously hurdles and roadblocks for us to try to pass legalization. But it doesn't help when the state media is constantly repeating all of this stuff. And most recently, this was the Oregonian editorial board, or not editorial board, a report from Harry Esteve with the Oregonian, talking about how the campaign failed to pay some petitioners, some of the campaign circulating petitioners. And the article goes on to say, among those who got stiffed was a 55-year-old disabled woman who said she believes in the cause and was trying to make a little money on the side by going door-to-door gathering signatures. Brenda Cahill of North Portland says, quote, it's making me mad because I went out there every day and worked for it. She says she's received none of the $450 she's owed. And this is just so very frustrating because this gets used against us, and you want the campaigns to be as well organized and well funded as possible, but we don't all have control over that. And I don't want to point fingers or assign blame or anything like that. What I want is legalization to pass. I really want this to happen. So as the article continues, it talks about how in the state records, the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act 2012 campaign has $333,000 in contributions, but $345,000 in spent to get the initiative on the ballot. When other loans and balances are factored in, the committee is running a deficit of $2,800. Now, this comes on the heels of hearing that Washington State's raised $2 million and Colorado's raised $1 million. And it just breaks my heart that none of that big money is coming into the state of Oregon. And we can speculate all we want on the reasons why or why not that money that's coming to Washington and Colorado isn't coming to Oregon. Maybe it has to do with the way the bill is written, in that it gives personal cultivation and personal possession and cultivation with no limits. And perhaps they feel it's a risky political gamble to spend any money on something like that. We tend to believe that this can be sold to the public as personal cultivation and possession, like we have personal alcohol possession. We don't have limits on how many six packs of beer you can buy. It's going to be an uphill battle, but it's even more uphill when we have no money to fight it. And that brings me to this part of the rant. This is a flyer that was handed out at the Seattle Hemp Fest, no, on I-502, just north of us in Washington State, where they're voting on a legalization bill. And it says it's not legalization, right? Even though it does legalize personal possession of an ounce of marijuana. They say it doesn't, right? It's not legalization, even though you could possess an ounce. Anyway, there were activists I don't even want to call them activists. There are people who were against I-502 spending a lot of time trying to convince people to vote against legalization at Seattle Hemp Fest. There were buttons and t-shirts and booze that cost lots of money in order to try to defeat legalization at HempFest. And when I talk to these people who are against I-502, one of the complaints they have, of course, is the DUID thing. But another complaint they have is that it's not true legalization, right? It's not legalization. And they complain that it's not legalization because you don't have the right to home grow in the I-502. And that it's only one measly ounce. I've heard that and seen that written many times. Only one measly ounce that's allowed. And I've also seen written that I-502, should it pass, would set a terrible precedent that shows that we can sell out to soccer moms, allegedly, and that's what gets things passed, and we trade away people's rights and throw people under the bus, and nobody will ever be able to drive, yada, yada, yada. You've heard me rant about it many, many times. So what I would like to do is to reach out to the people who are so no on I-502 and ask them to consider spending that time and money and effort passing what you consider to be true legalization south of you right here in Oregon. That's what I keep hearing from the 502 people. Well, if we had something like Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, that'd be fine because it's a unlimited personal possession, unlimited all this. It's a beautiful thing. Great. Put your money where your mouth is. Stop spending money helping the drug czar defeat a legalization you don't like, but defeat something that would buy all headlines and all national and international reporting would be called legalization. Stop spending your money trying to take down legalization in Washington and start spending some of that time and energy trying to build up legalization in Oregon. It's pretty clear that you're going to be outspent in Washington. They've already got $2 million on their side. You're not going to raise enough to make a dent in this. Now, 502 may or may not pass. I do not believe that any disgruntled tiny minority of the patient community in Washington can bring it down. If it's going to fail, it's going to fail because it doesn't get enough votes from the people who don't smoke pot. It's not going to fail because of the opposition of the people who do smoke pot. But in Oregon here, we got a real legitimate chance here of passing what you guys call true legalization. And if you're so worried about that precedent that I-502 would set if it passed, then the best insurance against that is to pass what you consider true legalization to set a better precedent. Because if Oregon's Cannabis Tax Act passes versus Colorado or Washington, if Oregon passes with no defined personal cultivation or possession limit, it proves that we don't have to sell out to any of these other demographics of people that don't believe in the true marijuana freedom we all believe in. If you want to see a precedent set, start sending that money and energy to the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act at cannabistaxact.org or octa2012.org. Send that money and energy there. Prove to the 502 supporters, prove to New Approach Washington that they didn't have to include per se DUID, that they didn't have to disallow home growing, that people in the Pacific Northwest are ready for that true legalization. Make it happen here in Oregon. Prove all the Washington people wrong. You can do this. You can help us out. And you can make a positive contribution to marijuana legalization that you can ethically accept, that matches what you consider to be true legalization, and still not oppose others who are trying to move the ball forward in their own way. Now, I know there's a lot of you out there that are, but Russ, we have to live with the results of our election. We have to live with the results. We live here in Washington. You don't live here. We have to live with the results. Well, that is true. But we all have to live with the results of your election. Texas has to live with the results of Washington's election. Tennessee has to live with the results of Washington's election. Maine has to live with the results of the election. The whole world has to live with the results of Washington's election because Washington's election is one of the big battles in global prohibition. Yeah, you might have to live with the worries and the fears of getting a DUID that you should already have. You should already be afraid of that. But people in Texas they still have to live with that fear and the fear of getting caught with a gram of weed and getting thrown into a Texas jail. Right? They have to live with the results of your vote, too. So don't oppose legalization, even if it's the worst legalization you might think it is. Because if it passes, if all three pass, please let all three pass. We send a message. We set a precedent that says three up, three passed. The federal government won't be able to stand against that. That's too many cracks in the wall of ignorance for them to be able to plug up. But if they can only get one of those states passed, they can unleash the full fury of the federal government against that one state. Don't fight legalization anywhere. If it's not the legalization you don't want, if it's not the legalization you want, excuse me, fight for the one you do want. We got it right here in Oregon. Help us out. Send those contributions to CannabisTaxAct.org, to Octa2012.org. Stand for the legalization you want. Don't stand against the legalization you don't like. That's all the time we got here for hour one. Stick around for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We got a few more things to rant about and a couple news stories that fell through the cracks. We'll talk a little bit about our fantasy football draft coming up tomorrow at 6 p.m. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers. We love you.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.